Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 11 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg classic award-winning film, Saving Private Ryan. I'm Rob, and joining me today is David Brooke of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show this season, David.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be back. I'm on an early show for once. I think usually I've been middly, latey sort of thing, yeah.
The last few seasons you've been on pretty early, but that's fine. But then again, because you do the musical interludes, you're on the first episode and every episode. So, actually last season you were this exact same week. You were week three.
I'm talking nonsense then.
That's fine. I mean, it was 6 months ago, so I can't expect you to remember that. We recorded back in March, who's supposed to remember that?
It feels like I'm on this every month. It's crazy.
I hope that's a good thing.
It's just a time thing. It's a life thing, I think.
Okay. Well, we all have that. That's an issue that we all deal with. Okay, so minute 11 begins with Miller trying to get all the men to safety, and ends with a critically wounded soldier asking for help from his mother. So we ended things on Friday with our good friend Captain Miller finally getting out of the water, no longer being as disoriented. There you go. That's that. I was close. I was thinking discombobulated. It's not discombobulated. Disoriented. By the bomb going off near, or the mortar going off near him. He puts his helmet back on. With to show us the gruesomeness of the way that the blood is just flowing in the English Channel at this point, or at least on the Normandy side. And here he is, standing by one of the Czech hedgehogs, right? He's standing behind one of them. We talked about the Czech hedgehogs in the past, so anyone who's been paying attention knows what they are. They're originally from Czechoslovakia, and that's why they're called the Czech hedgehogs.
And they're spiky.
So very simple. Yes, very much so. We get to hear all these. The sound is just unbelievable. It makes so much sense that this movie won an Oscar for best sound.
If it didn't, it's just a crime, because the sound design is just incredible in this film, especially in this sequence.
That's right, because you hear things zinging off these hedgehogs and when it hits the various men, and you hear the way the bullets and all the ammunition is flying all around. You hear it all. And I mean, we're going to touch upon this so many times over the course of this entire movie, but it feels so realistic. It feels as if we're right there. And that's the impression that they want to give us.
I think what's also quite brave about, this scene in particular with the sound design is the dialogue isn't always clear, but it's part of the kind of feeling. So you're not, if you were there, you wouldn't hear what Tom Hanks was saying very clearly. And it keeps it, the background sound is so loud, so intense. Whereas I get further into the past, if you'd have a scene like this, you'd hear some explosions and like that, but when a character is speaking, you'd usually be super clear and sound ADR'd in and just so you know exactly what he's saying about the story. But this is like, no, it's full on intense thrown in there. Maybe in a minute or two, we will start to hear a bit more dialogue when it gets a bit more important, I guess. But in the early scenes, it's totally drowned out.
Yeah, and most of the dialogue, when doing the research now, is the first time that I've heard most of this dialogue, or that I've understood what's being said.
Yeah,
because of the way that this is done. Using the subtitle to listen or to read along as they're speaking. There are a lot of things that I never heard before, and it's just so great the way that they do it. It really really helps to give us an impression as to what's really going on here with the chaos of this entire sequence. That's one of the things they're trying to show, is obviously the chaos of battle and stuff like that. Yeah. And I just really like the way that they do that here. And
Absolutely.
you know, we're going to see it so many times. So I'm warning everyone who's listening, you're going to hear me say it many, many times over the next 158 episodes. You know, about and you've probably already heard it over the last 10. Yeah. But oh well, that's just the way these things work. You know, especially when there are some things that are just so blatantly obvious. And you know, that's one of the things about this movie. It's so obvious how realistic it is and how it makes us all feel as if we are right there when this is all happening and going on, stuff like that. I neglected to ask you, David, what's your history with this movie? Do you remember, like, when you first saw it? Have you seen it many times? You know.
I do remember when I first saw it. I actually saw this in America. I was on my mum's American, so half my family's over there. So when I was young, we used to travel over there quite a lot. And one of the things I know a lot of people think, why would you go to the cinema on your holiday? You should be enjoying yourselves. But the thing is, I've always been a big movie fan, and
Well, I mean,
also.
of course, that's what one does.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, a lot of people would be more as you go out in the sunshine, you, I don't know, go and do something special you couldn't do when you're at home, but I'm like, no, let's go to the cinema. But part of the reason was is back then it's less the case now because we use digital prints and things like that for cinemas use digital technology is in those days because it was from what I gather because cinemas showed films on, well, on film, film reels, is that we would often, because we have the same language as America, almost, we would get their we would get the reels after they'd shown in America. So we didn't get films until it could be, I mean, it varied, but it could be a good like 3 or 4, sometimes 5 months after they'd screened in the US. So we always had to wait for films to come out. So when me and my brother would go to America to see family, we would love to go to the cinema because we could come back home and be like, yeah, I've seen this film ages before. I can distinctly remember going to America too and watching Saving Private Ryan in the theaters. And yeah, it blew me away. I thought it was fantastic. It's a film, and I don't know where in my head when you asked me to be on the podcast, I kind of felt like I hadn't seen it since the cinema, but I rewatched it ready for the show, and actually when I rewatched it, I recognized loads of it. And I thought, oh no, I've definitely seen this quite a few times, but it's been a long, long time. I think I must have had it on VHS or something and just watched the VHS quite often, because I knew so much of the film. Rewatching it, it was very familiar. So, but as I say, I've not seen it for a long time, and not since probably a pan and scan video copy of it. So it's nice to watch it. I got the Blu-ray. I watched it on my projector, nice and big, nice and loud. And yeah, and I still love
And you
it.
disturb the whole family at the same time?
Yep. Well, my wife actually watched it with me this time, which is rare. She quite often isn't interested in the films that I watch, and I tend to watch things late or when everyone's gone to bed and things. But no, she was up for watching this, and we shuffled the kids off to bed early and all sat down and watched it. And
Right, because you do need 169 minutes to do
oh
it.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah
that's
it was
it's
long.
almost 3 hours.
And thankfully the girls are kind of the way our house works, they're not directly linked to the living room, so volume wise it's not too bad. And they can sleep through anything, those guys, girls. So yeah,
And did your wife like it?
she did.
Has
Yeah, I
she
mean,
seen it
she'd
before?
seen it before. She wasn't sure, but when she started watching, she's like, oh no, she has seen it. No, she liked it a lot.
Hang on, this again.
Yeah, we both like it a lot. This it's not perfect. I think I'm not a big fan of the bookends. I'm not a big fan of the kind of the opening and the outro with the old I guess we can spoil the film, can't we, in this?
Yeah, we
The
can.
old Ryan. I don't. I'm not a big fan of those bits. They're a little bit sentimental, a little bit forced. It just doesn't have the impact. But the rest of the film, anytime you were out with the soldiers, it's fantastic. Also, there's a little bit when there's a the bit when the kind of generals meet and discover that Ryan's brothers have died. There's a scene in there that I think is a little bit ham-fisted, but everything else, especially as I say, especially when you're down with Tom Hanks and you're on the out in the field and stuff, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
No, I completely agree with you. That's why I'm saying this. Just to partially correct you on something that you said.
That's
You
right.
said that that usually movies come out much later, or at least back then, than in America. Now, this movie came out in July
Okay.
in America, and it came out in September in England. So it
Okay,
wasn't
not
5
that much.
months,
Well, I
you
say
know.
it
It's
did
just
vary, as it does vary, as it
it
turns
came
out.
out it actually came out in Israel the end of October. We discussed this on the first episode, you know, so I had to wait much longer than you did. Oh, especially since you were in America when you watched it. But yeah,
It did, as I
that's
say, it did vary. It wasn't always 5 months. It could be. It was just more. It did kind of
no,
depend on what it
obviously,
was.
no, I know that back then that's the way it was. I mean, I one of the things that I always like about living in Israel is that movies debut here on Thursdays as opposed to on Fridays. So there are many like big budget movies that I get to see, you know, now that basically it comes out around the same time. You know, there are movies I get to see before anyone in America gets to see them, or England or whatever it is. You know, it's like I remember the Lord of the Rings movies I got to see before anyone else, and you know, when all the Star Wars movies came out. You know, things like obviously not anyone who went to see sneak previews and stuff like that, but you know, the general time of when they were supposed to come out.
I found that in I found that occasionally these days, actually, some things come out a week or two earlier in England. I think they use it as a test bed sometimes, for the States to see how popular it's going to be if they're not sure. So we do occasionally get it earlier now, but back then we'd never get it earlier. It was always, unless it was a British film. The British films we get early, obviously, but yeah.
Right, obviously. But you guys also have the what's that called? The surprise
Oh yes,
cinema
Screen
or something
Unseen.
like that. And
We have Screen Unseen at the opening. I got to see The Substance actually last week on that, which is nice to see before anyone else. It's that is cool. I do enjoy that.
Yeah, that's one thing I always say, oh, yeah, they don't have something like that here. I'd love to be able to, you know, get the opportunity. The problem is, you know, you're going in blind. You don't know what you're going to see. It could be something great, it could be something good, and it could be something
Although
terrible. You
for
know,
that
it's one of
particular preview one, you can usually they do clues online, and usually there's always someone clever on Facebook or whatever who's figured it out, so you can usually figure out what it is. They do give clues, though they're quite cryptic.
All right, that works. So, all right, thank you for that explanation of when you've seen this and you know, and your history with this movie. So basically, Miller has regained his composure, you know, and he's getting ready, and he starts giving you know, instructions to Horvath and the others that you know, that they just gotta get to some kind of safety. He goes, you know, he on Friday he said, move your men off the beach, and today he goes, go. And then Horvath, I love Tom Sizemore. I mean, I've always loved him. He does some great jobs in some of the films that he's in, you know, forgetting about his personal issues that he had over the years and stuff like that. But you know, the character, some of the characters he played were just so much fun to watch. And so he turns to a bunch of guys and goes, okay, you guys. And then he like points to his rear and says, get on my ass, follow me, you know, like stick to me, you know. And it's just great how, you know, he doesn't just tell them it, he also shows them, you know, that this is what you got to do. You know, his hand motions are just great from that perspective. You know, having been in the military, you know, everyone has a sergeant like that, you know, someone that just is going to take control and say, all right, you know, follow me. This is where we're going, you know, and stuff like that. And then one of the guys, you know, asks a silly question to Miller. He goes, sir, what's the rallying point? And, you know, as this is all going, as we mentioned before, you hear bullets zinging all around. You know, you see the water splashing around them. I mean, this is a very, very dangerous place. And you know, when he asks what's the rallying point, the answer he gets is anywhere but here. You know, you got to get to some sort of safety, and just don't stick around here. So in some ways it's a silly question, but I think it's more for us to give us the impression that okay, you know, there's a lot of chaos, but there is some you know, they do have their orders and their commands that they're meant to follow. And we're going to see that throughout the course of this week, you know, that Miller is really on top of things. You know, he's the one who's going to be showing everyone, okay, this is what you got to do. You know, I know what needs to be done. which is great. And most of these people don't. They're just okay, get to the beach and that's it, you know. And we hear more explosions and stuff like that, a lot of gunfire and ricochets, you know, as they're all trying to move across. And then we see that they start moving across, and Miller starts moving.
Yeah,
And I mean, the camera work
that
is just
track
amazing
across
here
is just
also. I
incredible.
mean,
There's so
again,
much going on. It kind of gives it there's
that's right.
just yeah it by kind of keep it kind of keeps a distance in the characters, but tracks along. It just gives you the idea of just the scale and just chaos as well, because you've got stuff going on all planes and it's just absolute madness. Also, I mean, it's quite I think pretty much I think every camera shot really in this sequence keeps the eye level as well. It's the camera, it's as though the cameraman is here. I think I'm sure you've probably talked about this already, but on other episodes, but Spielberg's always says, I was watching some of the special features and he's always like constantly saying how he was inspired and kind of wanting to kind of mimic the style of documentary filmmakers from the actual period from the Second World War, who so war photographers and things who were down on there down during the battles following it along. He's trying to
Right.
and this, although this is maybe that particular shot when he's tracking along the side is maybe a bit, well, it's not that smooth, but a little bit smoother and more complicated than you might get for some of
Well, it's
the
not meant to be smooth. That's the whole thing. It's supposed to be jumpy. It's
no,
supposed to
but I mean,
show
no,
us.
well, no, but I'm saying that this shot is probably smoother than the original 40s guys would do, that particular
Oh, for
tracking
sure.
shot. But a
For
lot of the
sure.
other stuff
Yeah.
is kept. It's still handheld, though. It's, well, possibly. It's still got that kind of wobble to it, and everything else
Well,
is
that's the thing. It's
handheld right in
shaky. It's
there. Yeah.
shaky to because it's as if someone is standing there and is
It's
ducking
throwing you. It's
short.
throwing you as the audience member in there, as well as kind of harking back to these original kind of documentary filmmakers who were there. It kind of
Right.
works both
Right.
ways.
Have you ever seen was it Five Came Back?
Oh no, I haven't. No.
Oh, you should see that. It's a documentary film about five directors during World War II that enlisted, and they all the things that they did, but they're presented by five modern directors.
Oh, okay.
You know, so you have Francis Ford Coppola, you have, I think, Steven Spielberg, Guillermo del Toro, trying to think of who else is on there, and it's just great. It's
Cool.
a it's a, it's an amazing documentary. I think it's from Maybe it's from 2020 or 2021.
Oh wow, I've not
I
heard
don't
of that.
remember.
That's awesome.
I've seen it twice, but it's just amazing, you know, because they basically let these directors talk about their mentors, you know, about the way that the way that World War II affected them, you know, and affected their filmmaking and all that stuff.
Wow.
So if you are looking for documentary filmmaking of
Yeah,
World War II,
cool. That sounds
That's
amazing.
something that I definitely suggest and recommend. Then Miller once again shows that he knows where they're going he's moving along. He goes, "The seawall, move up to the seawall." And then we get a shot of some soldiers that are being defiant, you know, that they're you can see how scared they are, and they're trying to stay away. And you know, one of them turns to Miller and says, "Sir, I'm staying." And he goes, "Clear the beach, make way for the others." You know, because the idea is that you know, when you're in this type of situation, there are going to be people who are going like Miller to push you along and basically say, "Look, you know, this is the way it is. You got to get out of here." You know, and I mean, I like the fact that he tells us. And he's telling the soldier that the reason you got to get off is because you don't want too much congestion for the next wave that's coming in. Because, you know, as Horvath said at the beginning of last week, he says, you know, if you're crap, if you're too much together, you're making yourself a very easy target for the enemy. And that's what they're redoing here. You know, if you have people that are individuals and they're all standing on their own, that's one thing. But if they're all together, that's going to be a little bit more problematic when it comes to that. You know, because we get to see like another soldier who's just like hiding by one of the hedgehogs, trying to get away. And you know, he screams to Miller, he goes, "This is all we got between us and the Almighty." Which again, it's showing someone who's has fear, but he at least has some sort of religious belief behind it. That he has hope from religious belief. And Miller then once again just tells him like it is, and says, "This is every inch of this beach has been pre-sighted. You stay here, you're dead men." Which also is great. I mean, it makes sense. The Germans knew that they're there to defend it, so they know how to hit most of the spots. So again, this is telling this within it's telling the characters, but at the same time, it's also telling us. It's giving us more information as to what's really going on here. How amazing a commander Miller is, because he really. He himself might be scared. We've already seen his hand shaking, but he knows that this is what he has to do, and this is as we know from later in the movie, this is gets him one step closer to getting home to his wife.
And he's thinking logically, he's thinking level-headedly, despite of all the chaos and things.
Completely, completely, right. Completely level-headed with everything that he's doing here. Trying to help them move forward. That's it. Move along. And stuff like that, and we once again get to see Miller moving ahead with people, trying to get out of the way, and then they give us another shot of the Germans just opening fire on them, which this is another brutal shot that we get to see, the way that the German is just picking the guys off,
Yeah, it's almost like a video game. It's crazy. It's just like, yeah, just it keeps it, I kind of like how it keeps the German faceless at this point, because, as I say, although the camera breaks what we've seen before in moving away from the beach and moving away from the eye level, it's not showing us who
Correct.
is shooting, because the guys on the beach wouldn't see who's shooting. They're too far away, and there's too much crazy stuff going on. So it still keeps with that sense of you being there, even if it takes you to somewhere that you wouldn't be unless you're a German. Either that or he's trying to show from their perspective. But it does. But as I say, it does almost have a kind of a first person shooter kind of sense going on. Although I guess the first person shooter is in 98 were. Well, they did have them, but they weren't quite as advanced maybe as the stuff that we get these days. But it did remind me of that, and in a disturbing way, not in a fun like video game sort of way. It kind of it made it it showed how easy it was for this German to just mow down
That's right.
people, just like pressing the trigger sort of thing. It's it's
Yeah,
terrifying.
completely. And that's the point of it, to show the horrors of war, to show that war is hell, and that this is the way these things happened. And then they give us a great panning shot of all these soldiers, behind the hedgehogs and moving. You see a guy on a radio, and you see other guys cowering behind some of the hedgehogs. And then they give us a shot of a soldier lying on the ground with his guts out. Very, very graphic. You see b blood coming out of his mouth, which looks more like dried blood at this point, but it doesn't look like it's flowing blood from that point. And Miller, it I Miller basically is trying to stand up right behind this guy. And he's just screaming, and he's going, "Mama, mama." Which is the point of that is obviously is to tell us that these are little kids. These are 18-year-olds that are 17, 18-year-olds that are doing this. So I actually was able to find out who this character is, who plays this guy with his gut. Unfortunately, I couldn't find the name of the actor because it's not listed anywhere. But at least the wiki page for Saving Private Ryan, it at least tells us information about this character. So the character's name is Elkin. And I mean, I'll just read the quick bio they have here of him, and they go, "Elkins was a young ranger who landed at Dog Green Sector along with the rest of Charlie Company commanded by John Miller. He landed at Homo Beach on D-Day on June 6, 1944 as part of Operation Overlord. Elkin was positioned at the very front of the landing craft on the port side. Elkin was hit sometime after the ramp dropped off screen by a burst of fire. Elkin struggled towards the sand, where it became evident that he was mortally wounded. The machine gun fire hit him in his lower abdomen and upper groin area, disemboweling him. His intestines and other internal organs spilled from his abdomen. He struggled to hold his intestines inside his body, but they spilled out onto the ground next to him. As Captain Miller and the surviving Rangers and 29th Infantry moved up the beach between the obstacles, distant cries for Mama can be heard before Miller staggers to the ground next to the dying soldier. Elkin notices Miller fall next to him, only to continue to writhe in pain and scream for his mother before letting out a blood-curdling scream. So, I mean, I like the description. It's very graphic, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, again, it's meant to show us what's basically going on here. You know, how this, again, war is hell. And, you know, they want us to know it. You know, as he's screaming, you know, we see in the background, Miller just, like, stands up and just moves past him.
Yeah. Just, whilst you've been chatting, I've done a bit of some internet detective work. Someone on Reddit claims that it's Paschal Friel who plays that role, and I think they might be right. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, what's very interesting is that on IMDb, so there is no Paschal Friel. It's a guy named Shashi Rami, who is credited as Paschal Friel.
Oh.
You know, so if it is this actor, so I mean he is credited obviously from Saving Private Ryan. It's just he's credited as Soldier on the Beach. Okay. He has 47 acting credits. Most of them are TV shows, in British TV shows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, it's not always easy to find out who some of these characters are. But he was in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah. And Line of Duty, which is a very popular show in the UK.
Mm, okay.
Probably now, doing a small
now,
role in that.
Now I'm curious to know who he played in Harry Potter.
Death Eater.
Oh, okay. Just playing a Death Eater is, yeah. Couldn't be a little more specific. It's just like Soldier on Beat. You know,
no, it looks like he's just lots of small roles. He's in a lot of good stuff though. Yeah, just looking at his list now.
Very good.
Just a jobbing actor.
Exactly. Cool.
Also, I imagine you might have already talked about this on a different show, but you do get a little shot of the plastic bag around Tom Hanks's gun, which I found quite surprising. It's like I'm sure it's accurate because they did a lot of homework on this film, but it did seem weird to me. I didn't kind of think. I mean, it makes sense, but I didn't think the kind of plastic bags and stuff were that kind of commonplace in the 40s.
You're concerned about the plastic bag, whether it's whether it's an anachronism or not, or are you concerned about whether you know how does it work that you have a gun that is in plastic?
Oh no, I know how it works. I mean, it makes sense for if they're jumping in the water to get wet. But it's I don't know. I always thought kind of plastic bags and stuff were a bit more of a 50s kind of onward sort of thing. But I must be wrong.
Well, I didn't do any research on when they started using plastic bags, so I unfortunately can't help make you feel smarter with that one. So I apologize. Okay. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Oh, let me jump back on my notes. Just a minor point that I was going to say that fits into this last shot is I'd just forgotten how gory the film was. I mean, I always knew it was intense, and I always remember this opening scene being really kind of shocking and stuff, but I forgot how kind of just blatantly kind of gruesome a lot of it is. And this scene is the prime example of that.
Yes. Great special effects and makeup. No question about that. Every Monday we have a segment called the Maestro Monday, where my guests will give their top five John Williams suites, I guess you would call them. I've been looking forward for 2 weeks to listen to your list of this, because you're our maestro, you know.
Thank you. Well, this was hard. This was because I love John Williams' music, and he's done so many great film scores. This was really, really, really difficult. this list could change any day if you ask me. But at the moment, I'm running down from 5 to 1. I've got number 5. I've got Jaws, just because it's so iconic. Simple but incredibly effective. Yeah, I mean, everyone knows the dude, and he just the minute you go in the sea or something, you'll just have it coming to mind. It's one of the most, alongside Psycho, one of the most iconic scores of all time. So it had to be in there. But it's not number one, because I think it's not as one that I enjoy listening to as much as the other ones. Number four is Jurassic Park. It's just got a gorgeous kind of sweep to it. It has that epic kind of feel of adventure and discovery, and it's just wonderful. The main theme is just absolutely wonderful. And then number three, I've got Star Wars, which is another super iconic score. And the whole soundtrack for that, there's so many good themes in that. I think it's the main theme probably isn't even my favorite. I love the I'm talking about the whole series, I guess, rather than just the first one. But I love the Asteroid Chase music in Empire Strikes Back. It's one of my favorites. And the Emperor's March theme is pretty cool too. But there's so much good music in there. I almost had that number one, but at the same time, think there are some themes. I was thinking more of main themes, and there's a couple that I think I prefer to the Star Wars main theme. So number two is E.T. My brain's just going numb. The kind of bike scene and stuff like that. Yep. It's just really beautiful. And again, it captures that the kind of whole essence of the film perfectly. I think that's what John Williams is so good at. Mm-hmm. And then number one is Indiana Jones. I love the Indiana Jones theme. I don't know. I just thinking back. Like Raiders. As I say, the Raiders lost. Yeah, the Raiders theme. But I'm thinking more. I've been very vague with these. I've been thinking more of overall, because if I was going to individual films and stuff, I'd just get way too difficult to pick.
Right.
But yeah, the Raiders theme.
Well, I picked the individual movies for you. I give you the first ones of all of them.
Yeah. But although saying that, for Star Wars, I actually think if I'm going to individual films, I think Empire Strikes Back might be my favorite. It's just got stronger themes than Star Wars, the first one. There's so many others I could have chosen. The other kind of honorable mentions, although to be honest, I could even add more than these, but I was very close to adding Schindler's List. I love that music. Superman, another iconic one, and Close Encounters, another incredibly iconic one. So that was one of the hardest lists I've had to make. I think it's just
I'm not looking forward to having to do my top five of this either.
No, there are a lot of underrated ones that I could have had in there as well, but those well-known ones are so strong. I couldn't swap them out.
What do you think of the theme music from this movie?
It's less memorable. It's not one of his more memorable scores. It doesn't have a really strong theme that I'm humming. Like, I can't really remember it, to be honest, even now, just after rewatching the film. But the music is very, very good in the film. It does, again, capture the tone perfectly. And I do have the soundtrack somewhere in my cupboard, and I enjoy listening to that. It's beautiful music, but it's not quite as iconic as some of his other scores, which is probably a good thing. I think it's probably on purpose. I think we're talking, this film's trying to be more realistic, so I think the music is a bit underplayed, but purposely so, and rightfully so. And I think that may be why I probably find the kind of opening and end scenes, it's when one of the generals, whatever, does that kind of speech about when he's talking about the Ryan's brothers and how they should go and get them. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure the music is more ramped up in those scenes than any of the others. And again, I think that takes away from this kind of brutal kind of naturalism that's elsewhere in the film. But this is not a slight on John Williams's music, but I think it's less impactful when the rest of the film is more kind of down and dirty and naturalistic and doesn't use music as heavily. I mean, like the scene that we're talking about now, the Normandy Beach sequence, there's no music. It's sound effects. It's really intense. And that's what makes it more memorable, because it makes it more believable, because in real life, you don't have music playing in the background unless you've got some speakers or headphones on or something.
Usually when you're doing what they're doing here, you're not going to be having that.
No, some orchestra in the side kind of,
that's right.
Giving you a theme.
Right. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. So, David, would you like to once again tell people where they can find David Brook?
Yeah, so I write for blueprintreview.co.uk. And we've also resurrected our podcast. So, yeah, look for the Blueprint Review podcast. We're trying to do that monthly at the moment. And so far, so good. So, yeah, just check us out there.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude, you